After more than 20 years outside every Blues home game, St. Louis Game Time is bringing the coverage to you. It's almost always never easy, but this is Game Time AM with Brad Lee and Jeff Jones on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Game Time AM. It's dark and early out Monday morning. Hopefully your weekend treated you right, and it's back to the grind. Speaking of the grind.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. Stepping all over that. Back to the grind. We'll be the two of us, Brad. I'm Brad. That's Jeff over there. And Matt Davis, good morning. Jeff and I will be on the midday grind at noon in just... Seven short hours away. As a friend of ours on Twitter, Sham00 said, it's like this show's the morning skate, and then we have the actual game at midday. But, you know, this isn't exactly practice. I mean,
yeah,
we're actually on the air.
I would say this is more like the actual game, and then the thing afterward is when, you know, the Kurt Russell version of Herb Brooks' mate, right, makes you skateboards.
Yeah, back and forth until we're puking. So if you haven't checked outside, it's about 50 degrees outside this morning. It's supposed to get up to close to 80 today. So maybe spring is starting now.
The start of spring was the perfect excuse to wear my Women's Frozen 4 t-shirt this morning. Plus, I have a new tattoo I have to let breathe, so it was a nice...
You have to let it breathe?
Well, look, you put a bunch of lotion on it, then you don't want to like cover it in a sweatshirt or whatever. It gets all sticky, and that's not fun.
All right, so we can get into tattoo talk later, but let's talk a little bit for a minute about the Women's Frozen Four, which was in St. Charles here this past weekend. So on Friday night, there were the two semifinal games. How did those turn out?
It was awesome. All of the hockey was awesome.
Yeah.
The first game, Wisconsin had took a 1-0 win over Boston College. It was a 0-0 game all the way down to till there were 16 seconds left when the Wisconsin defenseman kind of let a point. Defender. I don't know. I had a conversation actually with someone about whether or not you should say defenseman in the context of women's hockey. Apparently, some people do, but I tried to use defender throughout the weekend. So a Wisconsin defender threw a point shot toward the net that sort of trickled through. The Boston College goalie, when I was voting on my all-tournament team, ended up on my ballot for the all-tournament goaltender because she stopped 37 shots, the first 37 shots, and shot 38, kind of squeaked through. You know, I heard going into the weekend that Wisconsin was the team with all the depth, and I guess they were because they, you know, they had 38 shots in that game and they had 43 shots in the championship game, but they scored one goal in two games.
Ouch.
One goal on 80 shots in two games throughout the weekend. That was pretty rough. So then the second semifinal, the Clarkson-Minnesota game, was the opposite kind of exciting, but still exciting. It was a 4-3 game that went back and forth. Goals kind of traded all the way through. And then they had the championship game yesterday. Clarkson pulls out the 3-0 win. Except their goaltender, who gave up the 3 against Minnesota on Friday, shut down Wisconsin yesterday. Big 43-save shutout. And, it was entertaining hockey. It was refreshing hockey, for sure.
So, it sounds like you're a little surprised. Were you not looking forward to the experience? Because you were covering the games for...
I was covering the games for the Ice Garden, the SB Nation affiliate that covers women's hockey. And I was looking forward to it because I have always enjoyed college hockey. And when I've paid attention to women's hockey in the past, I have enjoyed it. But frankly, I didn't pay or haven't paid as much attention as perhaps I ought to. So it wasn't that I wasn't looking forward to it. It was that I wasn't sure what I was getting myself into. I wasn't sure if maybe you would see, you know, teams that were one line deep and sort of one player kind of dominating and carrying the play all over the ice. And that was not what I saw.
So, but there are the community of strong women's hockey teams in the NCAA it's a pretty small community, right?
It is. The Frozen Four teams this weekend were an exact repeat of the Frozen Four teams from the previous season. There was a big poster in the concourse there at the Family Arena that listed the previous national champions, and there were not a lot of names on that list. Minnesota Duluth, Clarkson, and Wisconsin were the only teams who've ever won a championship.
How long has the women's Frozen Four been around?
I want to say 2001, about that long.
So about 15, 16 years.
Right.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah, so there has not been a lot of diversity in championships. In fact, I'm pretty sure for the first 10 years or so, it was only Minnesota and Minnesota Duluth.
That happens. I mean, it is still kind of an emerging sport, women's hockey.
Right, and with any emerging sport, that happens, right? You see dominance sort of right out the gate.
And then you kind of spread around. You know, I think you've seen the same with women's soccer on the national,
yep.
on the international level of play. You know, USA has been dominant, but other teams like Japan have come up and suddenly challenged that. So
well, and Clarkson, for example, by virtue of geography, has managed to grow their program, I think, because they only had four Americans on the roster. Everybody else was Canadian on that team, and that's because Potsdam, New York, is practically in Quebec.
They don't play in West County. They don't play in Chesterfield.
They do not play in Chesterfield. They did. One of their defensemen, Savannah Harmon, is from Downers Grove. She was on my all-tournament team ballot and made the all-tournament team and actually got my vote for most outstanding player of the weekend.
So did it feel like you were a respected member of the media at the Family Arena all weekend?
You know, on Friday, they kind of had me over in the – in fact, they had me over in the corner in the seat that was reserved for 590 Zone Doug Vaughn on Sunday. Didn't see Doug out there, but he had a seat. On Sunday, they reorganized the press seating, and this will sound very stupid, but basically they had organized it in terms of like who they thought was most important, started at center ice and worked its way outward. So NCAA.com had the first seat. The second seat was Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch,
the hockey guy,
and then it was me.
Well, hey, so. You made the three stars.
I was the third star of the press box of the women's Final Four.
That's awesome. It's better being than, you know, they had empty space and like, you know, you're down at the end line or something.
Right.
So that's, you know, I know there were a number of people. They had, you know, for what you would say a decent turnout, there was a lot of people in the pictures I saw.
I didn't see the attendance numbers announced. I would say that for the championship game, the lower bowl was probably 60% full. It helped that Wisconsin was in the championship because, you know, you can drive down from Madison fairly easily and make it to the game there. And I think there were like two full buses of Badger fans.
So I think the Family Arena holds about 10,000 people for a hockey game, maybe 9 or 10,000 people. So
a couple thousand people. Right. If I were spitballing, I would say $2,022 would be about what I would think.
Yeah, that's not bad. So that was an interesting weekend for you. We also have two Blues games we can talk about because we don't have a show on Fridays at the moment.
Yeah, I've watched five hockey games since we were last on the air.
Last Thursday. So, yeah, the Blues continue their road trip. Did they come home after Saturday night? I would think they would.
I do not know, but I actually don't think so. I'm pretty sure they went to Scottsdale and sort of just were in Scottsdale.
So they after spending a couple days in Southern California last week, now they're spending a couple days in Arizona. It could be worse. They could be stuck in Winnipeg or
yeah. I admit that I have not trolled through Joel Edmondson's Instagram in a couple of days because here's a little inside scoop. If you want to know what the team is doing off the ice, Joel Edmondson's Instagram is usually the place to find it. Fabry's also was good, but you know he's hurt, so he's not traveling right now.
He's not traveling.
Eddie's the man.
So. If you want to take the pulse of the Blues off the ice,
right.
Joel Edmondson on Instagram is the way to go.
And the other thing you get from that is because he's such good buddies with Ty Ratty, you occasionally see like a sad little Ty Ratty floating around the background.
So a week ago, we put the premise out there that the three games in LA, in Anaheim, in San Jose, those 6 points to really feel good about that segment of three games before we expected the schedule to get a little bit easier, which it did, that you would need to see the Blues get about 3 points to say that's a successful road trip. And they got four. They went 2-1 in those three games. They beat the Kings 3-1. They lost at Anaheim 2-1, but, you know, maybe deserved a point in that game and kind of got close to getting to overtime. And then they went to San Jose, a place where they have not had a ton of luck, and came out with a 4-1 victory, and that was a pretty entertaining game.
Yeah, and it's also kind of a reassuring game because you can, you know, dare to dream, but you can imagine some playoff paths that go through San Jose. So it was nice to not go in there and get our brains beat in. Now, at this point, with the way the standings are breaking down, it is pretty unlikely that we would be playing anybody except for Minnesota or Chicago in the first round, almost certainly Minnesota. But there was a chance at one point where the Blues could end up being in that number one wild card slot where they would get San Jose in the first round.
True. Couple stats to mention in that game. So the Blues, you know, the Blues got out to a lead. They scored first, Scotty Upshaw, unassisted. And then Mark Edward Vlasic tied it up. Then the Blues scored the next three. Zach Sanford in the second period went roof. Nice play where the shot went wide. The puck came out around the net. He took his time, turned his body, got set, and then just, I mean, basically put in the top of the net. It showed kind of calm composure on his part where he didn't rush the shot and either miss the goal or put it right into the goalie. You know, he saw where the empty part of the net was, and that's where he put it.
We should point out, by the way, Scotty Upshaw goal scoring streak.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna mention
start,
that
start he, of
the start
of
the goal scoring.
Right.
Spoiler alert: he scored in Arizona as well. So then Vladimir Tarasenko scores again in the third period, and then one more time with the empty net. That power play goal that gave them some breathing room was really nice because the Sharks were physical. They had 32 hits in that game. That's a lot for one game. And, you know, hot hits are kind of a subjective stat, and that a lot of times you see the home stat keeper edge the home team a little bit that, you know, you can say when two guys get together if it's a hit or not, and you can be a little more generous with the home team.
Yeah.
But 32 is a lot.
It is, and you know, we should also point out, and I think this was a Joel Quenneville thing from the series against the Blues maybe a couple years ago where the Blues massively outhit them and then, you know, barely scored any goals. And as Quenneville put it, if you're hitting people, you don't have the puck.
But conversely, the Blues were credited with 25 hits.
Right.
And so they were playing a physical, strong game too. The other stat that jumps out at me, two of them. One, the Blues won 53% of the faceoffs, which is a nice thing to see. Anytime they're above 50%, I think, is obviously something you want to see and can lead to offense, obviously.
And that faceoff percentage has skyrocketed over the last 2 weeks when Yuri Laterra has been out of the lineup.
I was going to say, is there any correlation between 12 not being around the team and them winning more than 50% of the faceoffs?
Or at least correlation between 49 being in the lineup and then winning a lot of faceoffs because Barbashev's numbers have been very good.
Absolutely. The other number that sticks out to me is blocks. The Sharks blocked 29 shots. The Blues blocked 21. So 50 block shots in that game?
There were a lot of opportunities. Now, again, when you look at those very high numbers, the high numbers of hits, the high numbers of shot attempts, it's sort of... it begs the question of what the stat keepers in San Jose perhaps are crediting there.
True.
Maybe they're a little more liberal than other locales are. But it certainly was a high game, or high action game, an up-tempo game. So you could definitely see what that happened. I also wanted to real quick, I wanted to go back briefly to Sanford's goal because that was a cash-in of a play that we see all the damn time that never works. You know, as much as we laugh about Pay-RV loving his wraparounds, Jay Bomeister loves that intentional shot wide bank off the board to a player in front. And it worked. He threw it about a foot wide on the glove side and hit a perfect angle to bank it around to Sanford. I don't remember the last time I saw that play work.
I was just going to say, are you saying it never works?
It never works. And
I saw it work one time back with Barrick Jackman when he used to do that.
Well, there you go. So that's
what
like,
kid was that?
That's right. That's at least twice in the last 5 years when they have successfully bounced the puck off the end boards.
You might need to say 10. Are we sure that he did it intentionally? Missed the net?
I'm going to give him credit for doing it intentionally because okay, he tries it so often that I know he wants it to have been done intentionally.
Are you sure he just didn't miss the net? I mean,
too much curvature on the stick.
Yeah.
I mean, if he missed the net, he missed it by a lot. Like a lot.
You're saying that's never happened
before. Well,
I mean, that's
fair, right?
By the way, you mentioned Barbashev being strong on faceoffs. That game in San Jose, he only won 30%.
Did he really?
There was a game recently where he only had 20% as well.
But there was also a game where he won like all seven of his draws.
Kyle Brodziak, 61%.
I'm a field guy, not a numbers guy.
Kyle Brodziak, 61%. Paul Stastny, 64%. Patrick Berglund, 45%.
If you won 30, what are you, like 1-3, lost 7 if you won 30%, I'm guessing?
Something like that. Okay. Doesn't totally say.
But there were spirit wins.
Yeah, there you go. Zach Sanford played 941 in that game. Barbashev played 1039 in that game. Not the most amount of ice time.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if you saw it, by the way, but Jeremy Rutherford wrote a story that I think was published yesterday. He watched that game at the Stillman residence, I believe, sat with the owner and watched it from there.
I did read that yesterday.
Yeah, it was a pretty interesting read. It turns out that Tom Stillman beats up his furniture, which is nice to know.
He hits the side of the couch, and it's really loud, and the bottom line was that the dogs will be skittish at anything, but they're used to that sound, and they don't even really react to that, which I have three dogs, and I wish my dogs wouldn't react to me yelling at the TV when there's a hockey game on. So they must have trained the dogs pretty well, or you know they've watched so many hockey games the dogs are used to it. So
I should point out, by the way, I've complained about NHL.com in the past, and I paid a not insubstantial amount of money for NHL Game Center for this season because I started the year in Washington. I wanted to be able to watch all the Blues games, and now that I'm here, watch all the other games around the league. I have been trying to pull up the video of that goal by Zach Sanford for about 90 seconds now, and I have watched three Enterprise commercials.
Well, are any of them with Martin Brodeur?
No, Kevin Weeks, I think, maybe was in one of them. Now we have a Duncan commercial.
Well, you know, it's...
Hey, NHL.com, enough already. You already have my money.
The league can't be perfect. All right, here's the last stat we'll mention from the game in San Jose, and it really jumps out. In the third period, the San Jose Sharks, they were down, got 9 shots on goal. The Blues got 16 shots on goal in the third period. That's about the exact opposite what you would expect for the situation, first of all.
And shockingly, it's easier to hold a lead when the puck is not in your end.
If someone could show that to Ken Hitchcock, if he gets, any sniff of the job in Las Vegas, or anybody wants a short-term deal with the oldest coach in the league, giving him a 2 or 3 year deal to coach somebody's team, which I don't expect to happen, but you never know. How many times did we say, oh, the Blues are up with a lead, there's 10 minutes to play. There won't be one guy that crosses. There's only going to be one guy that crosses the red line the rest of the game, unless there's a faceoff down there. The Blues turtled so much in their own end. I think someone called it a campfire around their own net, where they just make a circle and say, okay, try to shoot and score at the puck, at the net. And they gave away so many leads and went to overtime and lost games in overtime in the shootout when they could have had two points and held the other team, because they just didn't put any offensive pressure. And you see 16 shots in the third period with the lead. That's amazing.
It is, and we should also probably say that video to show to Mike Yeo as well, because it's fairly easier to imagine a playoff game, for example, in Minnesota with a 2-1 lead where we sort of do the same thing starting like halfway through the second period. So it would be nice to keep that in mind. As I watch for the video highlights here, I also wanted to point out that Carter Hutton in the net in San Jose played a very strong game, only gave up the one goal, and the one goal was kicked into his own net by Carl Gunnarsson.
Yeah, so, I think on Twitter I said, apparently you can kick the puck into your own net. That is allowed.
Point shot was going about 9 miles wide, and then Gunnarsson gave a nice little redirect.
So he's not playing the best hockey of his career then?
I would not call it the best hockey of his career, no.
Carl Gunnarsson played 15, almost 16 minutes in that game. He played more than Robert Bortuzzo at 14:32. Was a little bit behind everybody. All the other defensemen paid at least 20 minutes. So he wasn't exactly benched for that.
Which is noticeable, by the way, or notable, I should say, because Edmondson up over 20 minutes is kind of a big deal for him, because he has been much more often in the 15 to 17 range.
So maybe they did give a few extra shifts to him instead of...
Well, I think you've seen Edmondson in general lately being trusted more as that solid number four defenseman. Because for a while, when the Blues would make lineup changes, you'd see Gunnarsson sort of shifted up a little bit. He would play with Parayko, or he would play with Shattenkirk. Now I think they're pretty committed to Parayko and Edmondson as a pair, and you're going to see Edmondson getting those legitimate top 4 minutes.
So what's weird in that situation, the amount of, they didn't have a ton of... Talking about playoff or power play time, the Blues only got one power play in the entire game, and they're on the power play for a grand total of 12 seconds before Tarasenko scored. So maybe it's not a good indicator of what they want to do on the power play with defensemen. But Colton Parayko, or Alex Pietrangelo, I'm sorry, is the only defenseman who saw any time in the on the power play the whole 12 seconds. So I was going to say, why didn't Colton Parayko get any power play time? They just didn't have any time for him to be out there.
Yep.
So, yeah, it weird that on the road the Blues would be so limited in power play time. That's never happened before. Yeah. Bad NHL reffing. Anything else we want to talk about? I should probably mention you're listening to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan, KFNS St. Louis, 105.7 HD2, and streaming live on InsideSCL.com. You can also hear the audio shortly after each segment is done, or you can subscribe to iTunes and it'll download it for you. You just have to push the button and listen. So anything else we want to mention from the San Jose game on Thursday night, Jeff Jones?
The only tangential mention I'll have from the San Jose game is relating to Ivan Barbashev and Zach Sanford, because you have a text from the 6-1 great asking, trying to update my team on NHL 16. How can Barbashev be there but not Sanford? Number one, you should get NHL 17, because then you will probably be able to have Zach Sanford. And number two, the answer is that Ivan Barbashev played Major Junior in Canada, and the Major Junior leagues are in the game. So he previously exists.
And where was Zach Sanford a year ago?
Zach Sanford a year ago was playing NCAA hockey, where he could not be in a video game because he cannot receive residual money from the video game.
Right. So just a quirky little thing where one guy is available and the other isn't, because where they played a year ago. All right. So they had Friday off. They played Saturday at Arizona. And we kind of said, after they got through those three games at LA, at Anaheim, at San Jose, that the schedule just got a lot easier. So they played Arizona for the first time of three this month alone.
In like 12 days.
Yeah, because next week there's a home and home between the Coyotes and the Blues. A weird team to pick for a home and home, by the way. Weird schedule hiccup. I don't know, whatever, glitch. So they go in. I was surprised that, you know, I guess the situation, you play in Anaheim, you play in San Jose in back-to-back nights, you're going to have Carter Hutton start one of those two games. I think they definitely picked Carter Hutton for the more difficult game at San Jose. They limited the shots to I believe, 20, and, you know, he allows one goal, so that's pretty good. So Jake Allen comes back in for Arizona, and was he tested at all? Did Arizona really? I mean, they got some shots on net. But
yeah, you watch the highlight video from that game, and there are, you know, a handful of decent scoring chances. But
for Arizona,
no. But yeah, for the most part, no.
Yeah. So let's look at the numbers here real quick. Shots on goal: Blues 41, Coyotes 31. Faceoffs were almost equal, 51% to 49%. Each team got two power plays. The Blues scored on theirs. Penalty time is a big outlier. 15 minutes for the Coyotes, 4 for the Blues.
So now, this was a pretty interesting point about this game, because the Coyotes are already pretty bad and do not need help getting themselves out of games. But Anthony DeAngelo takes 5 in a game for boarding Zach Sanford very early in the game on a play where, frankly, I don't really know what DeAngelo could have done. Sanford pulls up in a kind of really dangerous spot as DeAngelo has already moved for a hit, and he doesn't drive him through the boards, but he bumps him in a way to where when Sanford's chin hits the dasher, he bled, and that's your automatic 5 in a game.
He basically wiped his face down the entire dasher board.
Right.
Below the glass.
And, you know, it's a dangerous play for both players, but frankly, Sanford put himself in that position far more than DeAngelo created that. But a 5-minute power play early in the game, the Blues only scored one goal, but at least it's enough that it stops the Coyotes from sort of getting into the game, and, you know, it keeps half their lineup off the ice for 5 minutes.
And it limits them to five defensemen for the rest of the game.
Right.
So, yeah, and what's weird is NHL stats say that the Blues had two power plays, but that was the only power play they were on the 5 minutes. So they say that's worth two power plays?
I'm sure there had to have been another one later in the game somewhere. Really?
Nope.
Then I'm guessing somebody probably misclicked the number of power plays.
Okay. Because that's a weird little
right. Yeah.
Stat.
No. That's one. That's the only possibility I can see in terms of recording power plays, because the Blues did score with like 6 seconds left in that power play, and because it's a major penalty, the power play continues.
But
so maybe
the Blues,
some, yeah.
The stat line says 1 for 2 on the power play for the Blues. That was the only penalty called on Arizona. It was 1:56 into the game, so just under 2 minutes into the game.
Yeah.
They got a 5 minute major. So it's 5 minute major and then 10 minute misconduct, so 15 minutes total. Those are the only 15 minutes, those are the only penalty minutes taken by the Arizona Coyotes, which I think is interesting that each team was basically, the Blues were called for two penalties, both in the third period. Ryan Reeves' interference against Timu, how do you say his name?
Pulkkinen. He had a breakaway there on Allen early in the game as well that Allen managed to shut down, which was, a nice way for him to get back into the game as well.
Absolutely. And then Alexander Steen took 2 minutes for cross-checking against Oliver Ekman-Larsson. And that was 17 minutes into the third period, 17 and a half minutes into the third period. So they had a power play late for Arizona that they could not capitalize and get back in the game. So
and on which the Blues scored their empty net goal. Because the virtue of being shorthanded with the net empty is that you can throw the puck at the net from all angles, whether or not you're across the center line or not, and it can sneak on in.
Maybe the stat sheet for the game is a little messed up. They have the referees at Dan O'Halloran, and the second referee is Furman Furman. His parents loved his name so much they named him twice.
The game summary sheet, by the way, indicates Dave Lewis was the second referee in that game.
It wasn't Furman Furman?
It was Dave Lewis.
It wasn't even Eric Furman?
It was former Red Wings coach Dave Lewis. It's Eric Furlatt, by the way.
Oh, that's right.
Eric Furlatt.
Sorry. Well,
that's
okay. I was in the
That's close. Best name, by the way, of any official in the NHL. I miss Thor Nelson, but the best name currently of any official in the NHL is Shandor Alfonso.
Shandor?
Linesman Shandor Alfonso.
Wow. That's that's an obscure reference.
Cousin of Evo Shandor, the evil ghoul from Ghostbusters.
You are going so deep, I have no response to that. We should go to the phone lines. If you want to dial in, the number is 855-282-8255. And Joe has used those numbers to call in this morning. Good morning, Joe.
Hey, good morning. You know, I called a couple weeks ago and said I didn't think the Blues are going to make the playoffs. And hopefully I'll have to eat my words on that and be wrong on that comment. I'm still not pleased with some of the things they've done with the roster. But let me just say this. In past Blues teams, they've had great regular seasons from kind of start to finish and, you know, kind of did nothing in the playoffs, went out in the first round and second round, whatever. But maybe this team, which has kind of struggled for the most part for most of the season, but in the last month is starting to play really good hockey and getting hot. And I think the teams that they're playing now, it's much better to play teams like Arizona and Colorado and, you know, Vancouver and teams that aren't in the playoffs because they're probably just looking towards the end of the season wanting to get out of here. You know, when you play these teams early on, they still think they have a chance because it's early in the season. So it's very advantageous for the Blues to be playing these teams now. And then maybe it's going to give this team some confidence in the playoffs. And I think you look at Minnesota, which has been great all year. Now I think they've lost, five of their last seven. They're kind of struggling. You know, it's hard. You know, it's hard for some of these teams that don't have histories of greatness to sustain it for an entire year. It's about getting hot at the right time, and maybe the Blues are getting hot right at the right time. And you know, Jake Allen is clearly playing with the confidence that you need to have as a goalie, and that's huge. So, I'm not trying to sound like a flip flopper here, but just a passionate Blues fan for the longest time, you know. And you know, like I said, I was pretty upset a couple weeks ago. I think rightly so, how they were playing and things that were going on.
Yeah, the Wild have lost five in a row. Bruce Boudreau kind of blew up with the press. He kind of blew up with the press yesterday afternoon. That's starting to be a rough situation up there. And so as it looks like the Blues are most likely going to be playing Minnesota in the first round, it becomes, you know, increasingly likely that that might not be the worst possible matchup for them. If you look at the playoffstatus.com does a decent job of tracking the playoff odds for teams. And so the Blues right now, currently, in order to clinch any spot in the playoffs, have an 8-point magic number for at least the second wild card. So any combination of 8 points gained by them or lost by opponents will clinch at least the second wild card for them. At this point, I think it would have to be an amazing choke job for the Blues not to make the playoffs at this point, especially with, look, they need 8 points to clinch a spot. That's four games against Colorado and Arizona. That's 8 points.
Yeah, and you get Vancouver too, right?
Right, and you have a game at Carolina, and you know,
right.
They're right. They're if from at least those six games they can't secure 8 points, then yeah, I mean that would be I think a debacle. So I think it's totally safe to say that's awfully likely.
Well, like I said, as someone who's you know followed this team for many many years. You know, there is something to be said. You see it in sports, getting hot at the right time.
Right.
Of, you know, you get hot at the end of the month, and you know, and maybe that'll be the Blues, because Jake Allen, and that's the key for me. That they still have issues, obviously, in front of him. Although, you know, I think the game against San Jose was one of the best games they played all year.
It was a very good game. Yes.
You know, it was. You know, San Jose is a really good team. I know the Blues have a tendency to play well against in the regular season, but I thought that was one of the best games they played. And you know, defensively, I think they're getting better. I think they're stronger there. I think they're still limited offensively, which concerns me in the playoffs when you're limited with your scoring. But you know, if you have a goalie that you know is playing at a high level, that goalie can carry you. He can carry you into the playoffs. So. Again, I don't want to sound like I was a flip flopper, you know, but you know, things change and
right.
I
mean, it's not
fair. I think it's fair to call. I think if you're going to rip the Blues, which I've done, I think it's only fair if you're going to be objective. You have to call in, you know, when things have changed and they're playing a lot better. And again, I don't mind eating my words if the Blues get to the postseason and do well. Thanks.
All right, thanks, Joe.
And I can relate to what Joe's saying, because you know, when the trade deadline happened and they didn't do anything to make the team better for this year, and they basically said, Doug Armstrong said, it's all in the guys in this dressing room on this roster for them to do something. And they didn't give them any help. They didn't add a veteran. They didn't add, you know, a defensive defenseman that maybe could step in and take some minutes from some of these younger guys that are a little shaky in their own end sometimes. They didn't add a veteran forward that could be on the power play or be a presence in the locker room. And, you know, we basically said you're trying to build for the future, but you're still trying to win now. And you're on the cusp of the playoffs. If you want to take a run at the playoffs, then add somebody and try to make this team a little bit better. Spend a fourth or fifth round pick. I mean, there were guys that were had. I mean, Drew Stafford was had for a sixth round pick. I'm not saying he's going to set the world on fire. He definitely would help on the power play.
Yeah, the question is, what adding a depth forward and putting them in the spot that I guess now that Zach Sanford is occupying, does that make the team a lot better? And,
definitely have dabbled in that area, because they tried Nail Yakupov. They tried Yaskin before he got hurt and collided with Bortuzzo. So they've definitely been juggling that spot on the roster that if they had acquired someone, could have been locked down a couple weeks ago.
Well, and frankly, when they acquired Sanford, I thought that he was going to be the fixture in that spot. I thought he was going to be the guy, and then he couldn't get out of the press box.
He played one game and then kept sitting.
But now you see that spot. You know, Yashkin is, I guess, hurt. We haven't heard a lot about him. I think it was Tom Timmerman said that he was hurt below the head. I don't know what that means. He bounced his face off Bortuzzo's shoulder. I don't know if he's got like a sternum bruise. I don't know what the hell's going on there.
Here's the thing though, what Joe was saying though. They have played themselves in a position during a tougher part of the schedule to reap the benefits of playing some of the sisters of the poor,
right?
Some of the dregs of the Western Conference, the bottom teams, and there's nothing to be ashamed of. You play the schedule you're given. You made it through the tougher part of it, and now you reap the rewards of playing well against good teams,
right?
And take advantage of
because
it.
You play these games throughout the season at some point anyway. Like we've talked about this over and over. 2 points in October count the same as 2 points in April. It is a quirk of the schedule that the Blues have this easy path at the end of the season here. But, you know, if you redistribute these games throughout the year, if you trade a Friday night versus Chicago for a Tuesday night versus Arizona, for example, earlier in the season, it's still the same games, just played at different times.
Here's the one point, though. The Blues are holding on to third place in the Central Division by virtue of the first tiebreaker. Nashville and the Blues both have 81 points. They both have played 71 games. The Blues have a couple more regulation and overtime wins, 37 to Nashville's 33. So they're comfortably in third place, out of the wild card situation. And you know, Nashville is in that second wild card spot because Edmonton has 85 points. They've also played 71 games.
Yeah.
So if they were to say they lose at Colorado tomorrow night, stay with me. I'm talking crazy talk here.
Right.
Say the Blues take, you know, go into Colorado and figure, oh, well, here's 2 points we're going to get. And somehow Colorado says, hey guys, let's not mess around. Let's play a real game tonight. And they eke out like a 2-1 win. And suddenly Nashville, their next game is tonight. They play versus Arizona. So
right. Let's say that they get 3 points too.
Yeah. So let's just say it this way. Nashville wins tonight, so they move back into third place. St. Louis has to win to get back into third place. Otherwise, they're in the last wild card spot. So the difference is LA, which has also played 71 games, has 75 points. So they're 6 points back of either Nashville or St. Louis to bump one of those two teams out of the playoffs. In 11 games, is LA going to make up a 6-point deficit in the standings? Probably not.
No, probably not.
But it could happen.
Yeah. So here's the thing. The other thing you have to consider when you look at the Predators' schedule is they have this game. So they have the game tonight against Arizona. Then they're home against Calgary, who is red hot, white hot right now. Home against San Jose. Then they do a back to back at the Islanders and at Boston, both of whom are fighting for playoff spots.
Those are going to be tough.
Home against Toronto, who is slipping but still fighting for a playoff spot. And then, you know, you're looking at Minnesota, the Blues, the Islanders again, at Dallas, at Winnipeg. So Nashville's schedule is not impossibly tough,
but there are
some big games. And there are also games against teams that need those points big time to stay alive.
That's the point I was going to make. There are definitely teams on that schedule where they have a motivation to play hard in those games and see what happens. So
the previously mentioned playoffstatus.com lists the most likely outcome for the Blues at 78% likely as the third spot in the Central Division,
which would mean they would play today the Minnesota Wild. And like you said, they've lost 5 in a row. In their last 10 games, the Minnesota Wild are 2-8. 2 wins, 8 losses. Ouch.
As that has happened and the Blackhawks have ascended into that top spot where they're not going to give it up and they're probably going to end up playing Nashville, Blackhawks writer Mark Lazarus tweeted this weekend, and we should all be afraid of it. The last two times the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup, they went through Nashville in the first round.
And that's what the matchup would be. So the Minnesota Wild are 2-8 in their last 10. The Blackhawks are 8-2 in their last 10. Yesterday afternoon, they had Colorado stumbled early, got behind, and then in a span of 34 seconds, they scored not once, not twice. They scored 3 times in 34 seconds, clinching a playoff berth in the process.
The Avalanche are so bad.
How do you score 3 times in 34 seconds?
They were down 3-1 in that game, and they won 6-3.
Ouch. And granted, one of the goals probably could have been called back on offsides. They did a review. There was a player coming back, touching up. You know, he was in the offsides position. The puck was coming across the blue line. It was razor close. I mean, just a hair. But, man, at first glance, it looks like the guy was offsides and the goal should not have counted. But, you know, they reviewed it. I'm sure the Situation Room, which if you want to talk to the Situation Room, their telephone number is still online if you follow Darren Pang on Twitter, because he tweeted a picture from the production booth the other night, and it had the game sheet, and it had the telephone number for the NHL Situation Room. We should have been calling it yesterday. Hey, are you sure you looked at that
you
replay?
You guys
want to
look at that, right?
Yeah. So, you know, it just seems like Chicago's getting the breaks. And
that was another game, by the way, where there was one penalty called in that entire game.
How is that? Has to be something where the referees have been talked to by the league. Hey, you guys are calling a lot of penalties. Maybe we need to dial it back a little bit.
That was Fred Lecuyer and Francois Saint-Laurent. So perhaps there was a translation issue. They weren't comfortable speaking in English on the microphone there to announce the penalties. Well, you can't ever hear it anyway.
No.
So I don't know why it would matter.
It would matter. So, you know, you see less penalty minutes in the playoffs. Maybe the referees are getting geared up for blowing the whistle less in the playoffs, and they're doing it here down the stretch in the last 10, 11 games. I have no idea. That's the only way you can explain it, where one team gets one power play the entire game.
The Minnesota-Winnipeg game, by the way, Winnipeg was up 4-0 in that game. The Wild scored the next four goals, and the Minnesota scored in the third. I'm sorry, the Jets scored in the third period to win 5-4.
That's got to be demoralizing. So, you know,
Chris Stewart, big two goals in that game.
Yeah, well, sure. So what were you saying about, excuse me, Bruce Boudreau? He kind of blew up at the press after the game yesterday?
He did. And I let me see if I can find the tweet. It was a K-fan there in Minnesota had tweeted it. Someone asked him about the team's performance, and his response was something along the lines of, here it is, Boudreau, listen, we stunk in the first, we better come back in the second. Resilient, you make us sound like we're good. And then he stomped off.
Oh my gosh, that's like the hockey equivalent of Jim Mora talking about the Indianapolis Colts when a reporter asked, yeah, what do you think about
playoffs?
The playoffs? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game. Playoffs?
I believe the Boudreau press conference lasted about 35 seconds after the game yesterday, which beats the previous record that I was aware of, which was the Ken Hitchcock press conference after the game in Washington right before Thanksgiving, which was about 90 seconds long.
Well, that's still enough time to score three goals if you're the Blackhawks.
That's true.
You're listening to Game Time AM here on 5-9 The Fan, KFNS St. Louis, 105.7 HD2 and InsideSTL.com if you want to stream or listen to the audio segments. We had some good stuff last week, if you want to go back, if you missed anything last week.
We had some good stuff today, too.
I didn't say that it was bad today. I just said, hey, if you go to Inside STL and pull down the radio show tab, you can pull up Game Time AM, and you can listen to any of our audio over our first 4 weeks. This is the start of week five, so over the first 4 weeks. Last week, I thought I was just going to call out our conversation with the third Louis mascot, the person who played Louis for the third person in line, who's no longer Louis, who moved to St. Louis from Columbus, Ohio, who had been a phallic-looking cannon mascot for the Blue
Boomer.
Jackets. Boomer. And who moved to St. Louis to be a big blue bear professionally. That is amazing to me.
Yeah.
But he had some great stories from behind the bear head, I think we should call it.
Yeah. Couple things we can get to the text line here. One from the 314 asking, can the NHL get a mic that comes down out of the rafters like in boxing so they can try to announce the calls?
They could have Michael Buffer announce the
penalties. NFL has had the body mic working for as long as I've been aware of and watching football. So 20 years, right?
Yeah.
At least, bare minimum, from my observation, for 20 years, the NFL can make the body mic work. The NHL can't do it.
No, and it's pretty much, if it does work, you're surprised.
I don't understand how the hell that's possible.
Maybe, and I'm just spitballing here, maybe that might be indicative of the level of professionalism of NHL referees.
Yeah, or the level of professionalism of NHL game ops, even.
Or the intelligence of NHL referees.
Well, okay.
I don't know.
You know, because here's the dirty secret about NHL referees. Most of the time, they're players who weren't very good,
right,
who wanted to move up, and that was the way they did it, through officiating.
And could be officiating players who they were competing for jobs in the minors and juniors, and
right,
dating back to when they were youngsters out on the pond in Ontario or
not the craziest Canada thing ever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another text here, and this is going to be totally off the rails, from our regular 314 buddy who gets
Is it about Konzo Martin?
Yeah, well, he did text in about Konzo Martin earlier to point out that the Konzo press conference was today. I'm sure we'll cover that on the Midday Grind. So tune in to the Midday Grind this afternoon. You'll hear more of us, and we'll happily talk about Konzo and Brad Underwood and other stuff that has to do with basketball. But he has texted into, I don't know, Gloat a couple times this morning because there was a shooting on the Busch Stadium Metrolink platform last night. So he's texting in to want us to tell him how Metrolink tell us how safe Metrolink is again. Number one, the argument I made, you fatuous jackass, was that Metrolink gets more safe when more people ride it, because when you have a greater density of riders, there are more people there to keep it safe, and it is less of a lawless wasteland. And number two, a shooting is not an indication of a thing being unsafe. It is an unfortunate situation. Yes, absolutely. Yes, trains late at night when you are riding by yourself, or even in this case, I think it was a father and son got accosted by some guys in the train. There was a guy on the platform, Busch Stadium, who took a stray bullet. It's unfortunate. It's a tragic situation. That does not mean that Metrolink is unsafe.
Or downtown
is unsafe. It doesn't mean that. It just doesn't.
Yeah, so that's an interesting conversation.
I will defend public transit to my dying day.
Even if you take a bullet on the Metrolink.
Yeah,
platform.
If I am shot and I bleed out on the Metrolink, know that I did it for my country.
And your beliefs. So you're listening to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan. I'm Brad. That's Jeff. Matt Davis is clicking around on the computer and pushing the buttons, making sure we're...
Matt gave me a look when I dropped that hard J right there. That's an okay radio word, right?
I think so.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. At 5:45 in the morning, yeah. I think we can probably get away with that.
Look, we had to use the dump button on the old changing station on Friday night, but not for me.
Oh, really?
But not for me. Yeah, somebody dropped a BS.
Well, that's...
I think that's a pretty frequent occurrence on the changing station.
Plowsy was quick on the button.
Let's mention that real quick. So there are a couple radio shows that were born out of the TMA fan page on Facebook, and we'll mention them again when we get to our Bad Blues Lounge post of the day. If you have, by the way, a Bad Blues Lounge post, you can tweet it to us. You can email it to us. Jeff, what's the email again?
GameTimeAM590@gmail.com.
So if you're inside the Blues Lounge and you see some jackass posting a jackass type post and you say, wow.
Now we're just rolling around in it a little bit.
I know. That guy is a moron. I can't believe that person, Eric, has posted this on the Blues Lounge. And you'd like us to read it on the air to make fun of it, email it, text it, you can tweet it, you can direct message it. We won't say who you are, so you can remain in the Blues Lounge and remain part of the resistance.
And we should, I want to point out, by the way, as I open up the email, we've received two emails here with bad lounge posts from our we'll call them RS. We're going to go ahead and not, we don't want to give them away. So we've got a couple of attachments here, one of which is... He has it attached as a dumb lounge post, but I feel a little bad about it because it's a thing that you and I both commented on during the game on Saturday.
Go ahead.
Sarah Daly does an amazing job on the broadcast. She has been fantastic. I enjoy
Sarah
Daly a lot.
Are we going to get into fashion right now?
We're not going to get really into fashion.
Is that what it's about, though?
The post was asking if you have to be dressed like a Jackson Pollock painting in order to cover the game. And I think Sarah Daly's fantastic. I will give her credit for this. She also, by the way, she was at the Family Arena yesterday, at least covering the Frozen Four. I think that's great. Somebody should dress her better.
Not a fan.
You know,
was she dressed like a Jackson Pollock painting yesterday?
I didn't see her yesterday. I just saw her tweeting pictures from around the rink. And actually, okay. I didn't even see her at the press box, but
that's
she was
fine.
There.
So, yeah. So, on Saturday night, she had this kind of white dress, and it had... maybe the black outlines of a flower going like all the way across.
It's not a bad dress. It's a perfectly fine piece of clothing. And God knows. Look, here's the description, by the way, for those of you curious about our fashion credentials. Brad is wearing track pants and an Under Armour Star Wars t-shirt. Matt's got a gray shirt with a hoodie over it and a sort of like alternative Cardinals cap. I'm over here in my Frozen Four t-shirt and green Cardinals cap from the weekend. So let me tell you, it is high fashion up in this studio right now.
So you're saying we don't have any room to talk, but we'll talk anyway.
Right, exactly.
So here's the thing. Bernie Federico has worn some weird-looking suits.
That's true.
He has one blazer that's kind of like orange plaid, orange and brown plaid, which our friends at 314 Threads, they've renamed their Twitter account Bernie's Blazer, and they use that picture of that specific blazer to represent Bernie's Blazers. So there have been times where Bernie Federico has probably made an interesting wardrobe decision, but he's not going to get called out on it, you know,
right,
99 times out of 100 because it's a guy wearing a straightforward suit sitting on a stage. Meanwhile, he has a female co-host now for several nights, and she's wearing something a little more interesting.
I'm comfortable threading the needle and saying, I don't give a damn what Sarah Daly is wearing during the broadcast, but I also think it's okay to laugh at it a little bit if it's a little silly.
If it looks like maybe it could be something
has nothing to do with her credibility or her abilities on the broadcast, and I think she's good. So I, you know,
does her hair get a pass here?
Yeah,
is this part of the conversation.
The hair to me gets the 100% pass because, like, we look. There's some hair on some broadcasts, right? Or there's not some hair. Panger, for example, not some hair.
They, yeah,
you know, we've sort of told the story in the past, but I guess when Mike Yeo took the team over in his first team meeting, he sort of chirped Patrick Berglund's hair. I was being told the story in Montreal. And it was being told to me, and I turned to the person telling me that, and I said, yeah, but is Yo really the guy to chirp somebody about hair? And as I'm saying that, he was right behind me and kind of walked behind my shoulder, looks at me, goes, hey, come on. So he at least is aware, you know.
Yeah. Here's the thing. We're not talking about Bernie Federico's hair. We're not talking about Scott Warman's hair. So if we don't talk about their hair, and it's not like Sarah Daly has a weird haircut, so.
Yeah, it's just it, sort of. It's sort
I think
of,
it's kind of weird.
I'm looking at it's sort of
I don't enjoy it.
I don't know anything about her personally. It's sort of mommy. I don't know if she has I don't know if she's a mother
she's
or
a
not.
Couple kids, yes.
Okay,
sort
yeah.
of
so
mommy.
It's sort of a mom cut. That's okay. She's a mom.
It's fine.
Right.
Here's and I've said this before, I will repeat it right now because it's still my point of view. She doesn't do anything to detract from the broadcast.
No, she does not.
There's nothing. She's not saying silly things. She's not making bad jokes. She's not calling attention to herself, unless you count maybe the Jackson Pollock dress, maybe. But if the only thing we have to talk about her is what she wears,
then she's doing a pretty good job.
Exactly. Her job is to get in and get out of the commercial breaks and to toss questions to Bernie. She's a traffic cop, basically.
Well, and we should point out that we were spoiled, I think, for a number of years because Pat Parris was really good at that job.
Yeah.
And, look, was good enough at that job that he now does, like, daily morning news in Scottsdale, right? Like, that's a pretty big market, and Pat is on TV there every single morning for a couple of hours.
Yeah, and he was just an in-game host for Cardinals and Blues games. So,
right.
Yeah.
So, obviously, that's a guy with a lot of talent that sort of was in that job. And so, you know, we should...
It's a hard act to follow, first of all. And second of all, I mean, it would be easy to say some stupid things and really be called out for it, and not one comment has been made about anything she's said.
Okay, so look, here's the ultimate point. Text from the 314 says, you have men media members trying to talk about Sarah's outfits, yet most, if not all, are slobs and fat and can't dress themselves.
Amen.
Correct. 100% correct. That is exactly our point.
I'm fat and slobby.
Yeah, I am also fat and slobby.
That's what we've come to here at the end of the first segment of Game Time AM here.
We are in 100% agreement that we are fat and slobby and do not have room to talk.
I don't have hair either, so it's not like we can talk about my hair.
That's of the three of us, I am the one whose line has receded the least far.
Yeah,
so I'm hanging it.
But yours also is
well.
Really
so here's
short.
The thing. I'm growing it back right now. I've taken it all the way down to nubs, like all the way down to bald, pretty much right here in January. And you know, I'm bringing it back, and it's retreating.
My claim.
That's how it starts. It starts
the front,
with
the front line is not
it down,
where it used
yeah.
to be. Right.
My claim to fame is I will be 42 in less than a month, and I have like less than 10 gray hairs on my head. And
oh my, no, gray hairs I got.
Yeah, my mother, she's in her 70s now, and she still has a fair amount of dark hair, and it's not fake color. It's natural, and I'll show you a picture during the break. If that's what I've got to look forward to, then I'm not really gonna be worried about the gray hairs for a long
yep.
time.
Before we hop into break real quick, I want to point out texting the 314, I guess, is my buddy Kyle says it was him dropping the BS on the changing station and that it was a pleasure to meet me.
So I was
it was quite a pleasure.
I was going to mention there are two shows that happen on the weekends most of the time that were born out of the TMA fan page on Facebook. TMA fan page, all three words. So there's the changing station that happens every Friday night at 11 p.m., I
yes.
believe. It's an hour hosted by Cucky the Dwarf, who's texted into our show several times, who was talking smack to me yesterday on Twitter, by the way.
So, hashtag Radio Wars?
Radio Wars. Cucky is on notice. He better watch himself on Twitter, because I've got now 10 hours of radio goodness where I have a microphone and I can say whatever I want about the changing station or Cucky the Dwarf.
So here's the thing. I know that
before he's on the air on Friday.
The TMA boys call that hashtag Scrapjack. Are we going to call that hashtag Cuckjack or hashtag Scrap Cuck?
Man, we're probably getting close to FCC rules on that one. I got to tell you. But
hashtag Cuckjack.
I have listened to the changing station. I have not listened to the audio from your appearance, but I almost called in and, And
well, here's the thing. I didn't have headphones. There were eight of us in this studio, and then one guy in what they call the cuck studio, what otherwise you would call the producer's booth. Yeah.
So there's five microphones in here and then one in there. So there's six microphones. So there are eight people vying for
six. So there were two gentlemen sharing this microphone, two sharing the one that I'm at right now, and then Plowsy and I were sharing the producer's or the board ops microphone.
Just lovingly trying to share the microphone. That's fitting for the changing station. And then there's Swope Picks that happens occasionally on Saturdays. I'm not sure if it's
roughly every other Saturday.
I think is a fair way to put it. So, and it's basically a best of the morning after, which is crazy that the ham and egg morning show has a historian that goes back to the vaunted days of the early parts of the show and talks about how things have happened.
Yeah.
What references really mean now.
I don't know if you listened to Plops Here Volume 1 over the weekend.
I have not.
It was pretty good. I'm not going to, that was a good laugh.
Because there's someone who texts in all the time, Misty Plops, and who's a frequent email contestant on the email of the day. Misty Plops.
Revealed here to formerly be Thomas in Oakville, pulling back the curtain.
Really?
Yeah.
I will have to listen because I'm curious about the genesis of Misty Plops. All right, we need to take a break so that we cut the show off at the right time and that all of our great words about Misty Plops makes the end of the segment. So we're gonna take a break here. It's almost 6 a.m. here in St. Louis. You're listening to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan.